Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
2020 has been a year for everybody around the world like no other. It's been a change to our lifestyle and it remains that way, with personal responsibility taking a huge proportion of our thoughts and our time as well. Sport has been one of the casualties, but given the situation around the world and a pandemic that has claimed many millions of lives, then it seems perhaps just a little churlish to complain if we can't have a full house here at Michelin Raceway Road, Atlanta. The good news, and we should celebrate the fact that we have this race at all. Brilliant work by IMSA, by Michelin Raceway Road, Atlanta, and by the 31 cars that have turned up for this 2.5 mile circuit, at this 2.5 mile circuit, and the 12 corners that makes it such a challenge for everybody. Hello, everybody. I'm John Hindhoff, and this is IMSA Radio and IMSA TV. Joining me in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, the cars are rolling out on their formation lap with just under 5 minutes to go to the green flag. It's our usual IMSA Radio team, Jeremy Shaw, along with VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter Shea Adam, and for the first time at Motul Petit Le Mans, welcome Johnny Palmer, our voice of the ELMS and of the WEC on Radio Show Limited. No stranger to IMSA, of course. You've done a couple of three Rolex 24 Daytonas and been with us at Sebring too.
Yeah, my first of those was 2015, would you believe? So, already five or six into those. But I've always watched this race, of course, from distance and thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm delighted to get the invitation this year too, and it looks like it's going to be a cracker with a number of names. Actually, you mentioned the championships that I regularly cover. We've got one or two crossing the Atlantic to join in as well, which is brilliant.
Your quick ideas of what you've seen so far, and particularly about the circuit itself, a short track but almost a bit of everything. What's your impressions? That's the word I was looking for.
I love tracks with gradient change, with undulation, and you've got that in spadefuls around here. Also, not a lot of space in the opening portion of the lap through the sweepers that run pretty much from turn one all the way through to five. There is the opportunity to get a run on somebody, but six and seven is really quite tricky as well, that double right-hander. Best overtaking opportunity, probably out of seven, the run through eight and nine and then into the braking area for 10A. But one or two tricky moments yesterday in the Fox Factory 120 with cars tripping over one another. It's a long, long race around a short track. I think the first 5 or 6 hours are just surviving out there and making sure that you're vaguely in the right position to attack later on.
Four categories on track. The GT Daytonas are the most numerate. Shea Adam, you've been keeping an eye on what they've been doing. Where are the storylines this weekend?
Well, I've been speaking to a lot of drivers this morning, particularly after that morning warm-up where the conditions were as cold as we have seen all year long. The race is going to end in conditions as cold, if not colder, and people reporting a lot of difficulty trying to get heat into the tires from every manufacturer except one. That would be Acura, who starts on pole. But the NSX GT3 car has not had a great history at Motul Petit Le Mans. Out of the six previous starts, they have once finished on the lead lap and four times DNF'd. So even though the car is starting on pole, the 86, the championship leader, Michael Schenck Racing, as it was known before, and now Meyer Schenck Racing, they're not exactly feeling completely confident about their car. They know they need to work hard to try and win this race.
Jeremy Shaw with me here in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. GT Le Mans, three manufacturers back. Welcome back again to Porsche. A race that they've had success at, and they haven't had a race win this year. Is it their time?
Well, they certainly hope so. That's the plan. And last week was somewhat embarrassing, quite frankly. Both cars out at Charlotte in horrible conditions in the first 15 minutes. Nothing has gone right for that team this year. They've been on the pole several times. They've certainly been fast, but they haven't executed. So that is certainly what they are hoping for today. And, you know, one of the biggest problems in these first few laps is, as Shea was saying, getting some heat into these tyres. The drivers are going to be really cautious in these first opening stages here.
Johnny, you have been looking at LMP2 as well, and a couple of names there you recognise. Only four cars, but it only takes two for a race. PR1 Matheson Motorsport have been very quick. And at the front of the field, it's the Acuras, the two Acura team Penske's, on the pole position. They are leading the cars now round to the green flag. 10 hours on the clock. It is a time-certain race, and we are green and racing. Cameron and Taylor for Acura team Penske as the cars fan out across the start-finish line. And for a moment, there was 1, 2, 3, 4 across the track as they go into turn one. Cameron Taylor, then Felipe Nasser going through in third position, the red and white wheel and engineering car, as they fall in line astern with Harry Tinknell trying to muscle his way through there in the Mazda, and has been able to get that done. Ryan Briscoe was side by side with Tinknell for a while, then Tristan Nunes in the white number 77 Mazda. In LMP2, Patrick Kelly led them off from Rob Hordes and Jim McGuire, John Ferrano in the Tower Motorsport by Starworks team. It's the Corvette that led away in GT Le Mans ahead of Conor DeFilippi in the BMW, and Shinji Mishimi for Acura in the number 86 by Shank Racing car ahead of the Scuderia Corsa Jeff Westphal in GT Daytona. What a start! What a start from the front of the field by the pole sitting car, and Tristan Nunes also making up positions as well as he comes through to the end of the first lap then under clear blue sky, 16 Celsius in the air, chilly but not too bad, 46 Celsius on the track, the sun's been out since it came over the tree line. Cameron, Taylor, Nasser, Tinknell, Nunes, Briscoe, Acura, Acura, Cadillac, Mazda, Mazda, Konica Minolta Cadillac, the championship leader, the number 10 car in 6th position, who, by the way, they have added Scott Dixon to their driver roster on that number 10. Meantime, it's already been a problem for a car that went off early on. That was the 8 car, went off at turn 5, but has continued, has dropped down the field for John Ferrano and is now right mired right in the middle of the GTDs. Jeremy Shaw, what a start for Dean Cameron. He has absolutely nailed the green flag lap.
Yeah, he has, wasn't it? What a brilliant start that was. I mean, he's a full 1.6 seconds clear at the end of the first lap, the pole sitter, Dean Cameron. You know, he's on a mission this weekend. He and Pablo Montoya just had a really disappointing season. The best finish, 4th. That was in the first 2 races of the season. Both of which were at Daytona. He's had nothing at all since then. So you know, he's was on the pole last time out. He's on the pole again today, and he is making the early going here at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. A really blinding start by Dean Cameron. I was actually chatting to him on text just about an hour or so ago, and he was saying it was going to be really, really tricky in the opening stages. Well, he's 2 seconds clear of everybody already. That's remarkable.
Did exactly the same in the 6 hours, if you remember, Jeremy. Clearly wants to be out of the way of any schmozzle. And earlier on, John Ferrano just losing it over the brow at turn 5, right in front of Conor DeFilippi, who leads in GT Le Mans. The two BMWs have come to the front of the field with Lawrence Vanthoor for Porsche number 912, then Tonio Garcia, Nick Tandy and Tom Milner for respectively Corvette, Porsche and Corvette. Corvette have had a great run since we came back to IMSA Racing over the weekend of the 4th of July at Daytona, taking their 100th victory in IMSA competition over 2 years after they took their 99th. And then only BMW have stopped them winning every race, and it's only the one they've had a cracking return to form. Hard point, the number 30 Audi, getting up the back straight quite nicely at the moment. That is Andrew Davis, who had Zach Robichon right in front of him. News announced yesterday that Hardpoint going into a relationship with Earl Bamber Racing. Yes, that Earl Bamber who races. That team well established in Porsche Carrera Cup Asia and have fielded cars in the 12 Hours of Bathurst and indeed won that event. Will Bamber, brother of Earl and a tidy race driver himself, and Earl run that team. And in 2021 in the new Porsche Carrera Cup North America, Hardpoint and EBM will be fielding an entry with the new 992 Cup Class car, expecting a minimum of 15 and probably closer to 20 of those cars in that new series, sanctioned by IMSA for an 8-event, 16-round series in 2021. 5 minutes in, and Dean Cameron leads then for Acura by 2.2 seconds. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it's at IMSA Radio. We're on 98.1 Road Atlanta FM at the track, Sirius 217 XM 212, and around the world at RS2 IMSA Radio. Jeremy Shaw, good start, good clean start, and now it's going to be all about getting into your race rhythm and starting to get these laps reeled off.
Yeah, that's exactly right. A good clean start for all except John Ferrano then. Interestingly, John Ferrano elected to start on a fresh set of tyres for this race. I questioned Peter Barron, who's the calls all the strategies there for tyre motorsport by Team Starworks. He said, yeah, he's under strict instructions to be careful in the first few laps. Well, he's got away with it. He's moved his way back through the GTD field now. But for everybody else, a nice clean start and you're already settling into a rhythm here. And you know, I think as this race unfolds, the drivers are going to be cautious, certainly in the early stages, like Johnny Palmer was saying. It's really only when you come down to the last hour or two that it's really going to be flat out racing. Now you've just got to keep it clean, particularly in these cold, cool conditions, but also trying to save a bit of fuel. That's going to be a factor all the way through this race. The least time you spend in the pit lane, is that a problem?
I was earlier on, Jeremy.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Earlier on, right, fine. The least time you can spend in the pits here, if you take on a little bit less fuel during each of your stops, that could be crucial as this race unfolds.
And if you're wondering why Jeremy is mentioning fuel after 7 minutes of a 10-hour race, yes, of course, there's going to be multiple pit stops. Yes, of course, there's going to be plenty of time to put fuel in. But any time you can save, even a tiny bit of fuel, that is less time that you are standing still in the pits. For the most part, the determining factor of how long you are in the pit lane will be how much fuel you put in the car. The fuel goes in at a standard rate, and in fact, there are standard refueling times in the IMSA regulations, so you can't mess about with the fuel rig, for example. You can certainly change the tyres, you can definitely change drivers in the time that it takes you to put somewhere near a full tank of fuel in. So even a fraction of a gallon or a litre that you can save, that will add up, and that might make a little bit of difference, particularly if you're looking for some track position later on in the race. I'll pause the keys to the race, by the way, 3 hours 43 minutes after official sunset, before the 10 hours elapses. That's the most darkness running we've ever had at Motul Petit Le Mans due to the later green flag time. And watch out at various intermediate times during the race for some odd strategy for teams who are riding high in the Michelin Endurance Cup. This is a championship within a championship for IMSA. And we'll keep you up to date with that and the teams who are in contention, because it may seem that they are going off strategy and doing pit stops at odd times. And just before we get asked, minimum drive times for Pro, 45 minutes. So that's DPI and LM, GTLM. Maximum for everybody is 6 hours of driving per driver, only 4 hours in any six. Minimum time for the Truman Aitken is 2.5 hours, and that is exactly the same for all the drivers in P2 and GTD. So plenty for the strategists to think about as they settle in for this long run to the checkered flag. And remember, the days of this being a 1,000-mile race, long gone. This is now 10 hours, on the clock, and we've got 9 hours and 51 still to go. 1.4 seconds at the head of the field for Dane Cameron from Ricky Taylor, then Felipe Nasr. Harry Tinknell's put the fastest lap of the race in with a 110.1, heavy fuel and used tyres. Heavy car with fuel and used tyres. Big lock up from the 55 a moment or two ago at the top of the hill at turn two as he was going past Harry Tinknell, going past the number 74 Riley of Gar Robinson for Riley Motorsports, but pulled out. And Shea Adam has some news of a little light contact early in the piece.
There was a little bit of contact between the 31 Whelen Engineering Cadillac and the 44 GRT Magnus Lamborghini of John Potter. John radioed into the team to let them know, but he now says that everything feels like it's okay. Also investigating after what happened to the pole sitter in GTD, was hearing there was a bit of contact between the 63 Scuderia Corse Ferrari and that Acura of Shinya Mishimi. He's now dropped back to fourth. Whereas to put people at a bit of ease of mind, Antonio Garcia in the number 3 Corvette, which started on the pole position, reported that there was a little bit of bottling up at the start. He received a small bump at the green flag. And rather than risk and fight to win the race with 9 hours and 59 minutes to go, he backed off a little bit. So that's why Corvettes are currently running in fourth and sixth. They know that it's a long game.
Jeremy Shaw in our Porsche Keys, the race, I said, with 31 entries, traffic always going to be a problem here. But I thought it might be 6, 7, or 8 laps before the front of the field hit the back of the field. We're in there at 5 laps in.
Yeah, that was amazing. You're right. It generally should be 7 or 8 laps. It should be 7 or 8 laps once the race gets started. But I think some of the GTD guys in particular are just being super cautious in the opening stages of this race because it is so cool out there, making sure there is temperature in the tyres before they're comfortable enough to push. Of course, in GTD and the Pro-Am classes, the other one being LMP2, it's the lesser experience, that the lower rated drivers that have to start the race. They're the guys who have to qualify and start the race. So they have a lot less experience in these sort of conditions than the pros that are out there in the DPIs and the GTLM. So I think that probably explains that. I think you'll be lapping them not quite as often once the race gets into full swing, but it'll still be regularly. And you're right, we don't have quite as many cars this season, but I tell you what, the leaders won't think that. They're almost constantly in traffic now for the rest of the 10 hours, and that is so hard mentally. Not so much physically, but mentally it's really tough for the drivers.
JT Le Mans, Johnny Palmer, you're keeping a weather eye on that, and all 6 cars are line astern off for Harry Tinknell at turn 10B, and he's straight into the pits. He's locked it up and got across the grass there. He was charging early on, already had a lock up at turn 2. We'll get back to the GT Le Mans battle with Johnny Palmer in a moment or two's time. Now, did the flat spot of those Michelin tyres cause him an issue? Was he trying to battle for third position? Nevertheless, Shea Adam, with this VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock Report, he's our first pit caller.
He is, and the tyres are coming off the front. There's a bit of a delay. There would have been time to see him coming down the hill on the monitors, so the crew should have been prepared for this. It's a bit of a leisure stop. They've now pulled off the left rear, waiting for a new tyre to come over the wall. But, yeah, they're trying to decide if they want to put a new left rear on. Yep, now they have gone to that. A very casual stop from Mazda Motorsport that's very unlike them. Waiting on fuel at this point, and the last tire goes on. That's the front right. Car drops off the air jacks, and away goes Harry. So they're not worried about any damage to the car. But the interesting thing was that Harry committed to the pit box very early on. He drove through about 7 other pit boxes. Normally, that is a no-no in IMSA competition. So I wonder if maybe he was worried about being able to steer the car into the box too.
Well, that big lock-up early when the DPIs were going through traffic, and then coming down to the bottom of the hill. My goodness, he almost picked up the prototype ahead of him that he was racing. And that was, I think that was the, was that one of the Acuras or was that one of the P2 cars? It looks like he'd locked everything up, shit.
The 55 has gone behind the wall. They just put new tires on, but they actually rolled it back to the garage.
I think that's a brake issue. I'm almost certain that is a brake issue for that car down at 10A. It was a fabulous save by Harry Tinknell. Johnny Palmer The car ahead may not know how close. In fact, it looks to me as though he's exploded a brake disc. Yeah. Huge, huge puff of dark black smoke, which normally means that something's gone in the braking line. And that is an extraordinary save, Johnny Palmer, if that has happened. That is so quick down there. And Tinknell has avoided a huge accident which would have involved another car.
Yeah, it did incredibly well. He was chasing, actually, Felipe Nasser, but the car between them was, I think, John Ferrano was trying to pick up the places. So that was the LMP2 Tower Motorsport by Starworks car. And as he hit the brakes to make sure that he'd given John ample room into 10A, as you said, massive failure. Couldn't quite work out which side of the car it was, but it meant retardation just left him and he had to skate through the gravel trap. An incredibly good rescue point there from the man from Exeter in the UK, the southwest of the UK, and he got it back to the pits, crucially, behind the wall, I know, but it could have been worse than that. Had the car gone sideways, I mean, it could have very easily flipped into the gravel trap as well. So he did really well.
And that's why, clearly, he came into the pits early. He was slowing that car down as best as he could. I'm not sure he had a fully functioning set of brakes. And when the guys were looking underneath the wheel arches of that car, clearly they saw something awry. They've put a set of tyres on, but it is now behind the wall. So early problems for Harry Tinknell and the 5-5, the double nickel. Then back at the hauler, having some work done. Reason, by the way, that they've taken it behind the wall is A, they will have more equipment back there, but also they can use more people on it and work on it without any restriction, as if they were working on the pit lane. Also, it's a heck of a sight safer not to be working on a live pit lane as well. Jeremy Shaw, Dane Cameron's lead, just been pegged back by Ricky Taylor, but they've cleared off 5 seconds ahead of Felipe Nasser in third place for the first of the Cadillacs.
Yeah, absolutely right. And it's a good pace being run out in front here by the two Acuras, picking their way through the traffic. Felipe Nasser certainly had the worst of the traffic because he's actually set the fastest lap of the race in that third place car, number 31. He set a 1:09.98 last time around for a race leader with a pretty clear lap that time around. A 1:10.2 for Dane Cameron. At 1.7 seconds then between the top two. Just looking a little bit further down the order, Patrick Kelly well clear of Rob Hodas in LMP2 to the tune of, well, I'm not sure how far it is at the moment because they're just waiting for them to come around right now. The gap last time around was about 16 seconds, so he's absolutely hauling away there. Really good run by Patrick Kelly. In GTLM, Jim McGuire was holding up that pack in car number 38, the LMP2 car. They've now, all of the GTLM cars have got past Jim McGuire, so that's good. At least now they'll be able to settle into their own race, because for those first few laps, you know, the LMP2 car is so quick on the straights, the GTLM's led by Conor DeFilippi just couldn't get past him. And so they were kind of bottled up there, but now I think the cork has come out of that bottle. So the two BMWs up in first and second now in GTLM. DeFilippi ahead of Edwards. Pole sitter Antonio Garcia, who has set the fastest lap of the race in the early stages in car number 3, is back in fourth place.
It's Jeremy Shaw alongside Johnny Palmer and me, John Hindhoff, in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Shea Adam is keeping an eye on what's going on behind the wall with the Multimatic Mazda team. Shea?
Brake disc change all around for the 55 Mazda, which is a bit interesting because you'd think if it was just an issue from one side of the car, they would have just done the one side. But no, all 4 brake discs, they're now putting the nose back on, reattaching all the bits that need to be. Harry did not get out of the car during this period of time. Co-driver Ryan Hunter-Reay was standing beside the car watching the work happening. But this car should be heading back out on track soon, which is good because they're currently 4th in the overall season championship, only 8 points off the lead, meaning that Harry Tinknell and Jonathan Bomarito still stand a chance of winning the overall season championship.
Yeah, the reason that they will change all of the discs, of course, is they're a matched set, and you might do front apart from the rears, but you wouldn't do one side. You bed in brakes on a set of rotors, you bed in pads on a set of rotors, and then if you're going to change the rotors, you'll change them as a set. I suspect, given the amount of black dust that came out from underneath that Mazda, that was a disc failure, a brake rotor failure from Harry. And that is very, very unusual and rather worrying, because I would have thought that those would have been replaced probably embedded in possibly this morning in the warm-up session. That car is back on the pit lane. It comes back to its pit box, as it has to do, and stop and then go back out. So that's a very, very good turnaround. But already the 5.5 Mazda has dropped some five laps from the overall lead, still held by Acura Team Penske, the number six of Dane Cameron. Nice bit of work, though, by the Multimatic team. Johnny Palmer, we were talking about GT Alema a little while ago. They're still pretty much in lockstep. The two BMWs, the Porsche, the Corvette, And this is what we've come to expect from GT Alema. But of course, first time at Petit Le Mans for the new Corvette. The advantage is they have raced here before because they did the six-hour race a month ago.
Yes, I like Jeremy's point about them all being held up a little bit, as I think the Wright Motorsport car goes for a grassy moment there at turn three in GT Daytona. But, yeah, they got now the right side of John Ferrano, can start to concentrate on just trying to find a little bit of rhythm. The BMWs were just stellar in qualifying. They came out for the last 5 minutes and were right up there. I know that's been the pattern of play generally all season, but the M8 GT doesn't take too long at all for the tyres to come in. All the tyre temperature will be fine across all three manufacturers now. But interesting to see how Tonio Garcia is getting on, considering he was so dominant in qualifying yesterday. I know the times were pretty narrow anyway, but Garcia in the early stages has actually slipped back to fourth position in favour of those two BMWs. The 25 of Conor DiFilippi leading the class from John Edwards, and Laurence Vanthoor, the Belgian, for Porsche into third. So Garcia sticking with the leaders. That's all you got to do in the opening few hours.
Pit stop for the 48 Lamborghini. Shea Adam with this VP Racing Fuel pit report.
We talked about it in the countdown to green, but it is all about the Michelin Endurance Cup for the 48 Paul Miller Racing Team. Going slightly off strategy, but back timing to that four-hour mark starts now. Fuel only for Madison Snow.
Wow, okay, so they're setting out their stall very early on. 4-8, and then obviously the 10-hour mark at the end of the race for the Michelin Endurance Cup points, which is the championship within the championship. There's a sprint championship as well, of course. And then the overall championship, the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Still with a couple of events to go after this one, remember. Not unique. We have had events after Petit Le Mans in past years of the championship. I certainly remember a race into the gloaming, if not the darkness, what is now WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. I seem to think we raced at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, believe it or not, on a Roval. Turn one, issue. Oh, dear me, this is the 85, the white and red prototype. And that is Gabrielle Aubrey for JDC Miller Motorsports. And that is a full course caution. So barely getting going with 22 and a half minutes gone. And the 85 has gone pretty much straight on at turn one. The tyres have done their job. And here is the first of our full course yellows. And the Porsche safety car will head out onto the track. Already the incident vehicles are beginning to arrive on the scene. Engine still running in the Cadillac. Reverse not selected by Gabrielle Aubry. And still not selected by Gabrielle Aubry. Shit.
I think he's trying, John, but maybe he didn't do what you often say is the most important thing. Ask the crew where reverse is the first time you get in the car.
It sounds an odd thing to say, doesn't it? Because you hope you're never going to use it. But my very first motor race, I ended up facing the wrong direction when somebody took a dislike to me going by them. And I had completely forgotten to ask where reverse was and whether there was some kind of interconnect or button or series of buttons of where to get it. And those lessons that you learn early, you never forget. And now the first thing I always do when I get into a race car, how do I get reverse? Ah, you have to press this button, spin around twice and click your heels together. Ah, right, okay. Well, Aubrey has got the car back onto the racing surface, but the bad news is the front bodywork is caught up around the front left wheel, and I don't think he's going to be able to drive it away without a little assistance from the IMSA EMR safety crew. They are quick to come and carefully take that errant bodywork off. There will be wiring in there for things like the headlights, and that's what they will be taking care of at the moment. No option but to go full course yellow with the car seemingly stranded there, Jeremy. Very fast entry to turn one.
Yeah, no question. That's right. That's absolutely right. And the officials are always going to err on the side of caution, particularly in the early stages of the race. So, but that, yeah, it's a scary place to go off there at the best of times. And, you know, it just highlights how difficult this racetrack is. That's a super fast corner. You know, in qualifying trim, it's not far off flat out through there. I mean, really, really fast, well over 150 miles an hour. You're probably not doing that speed now, certainly, but still. Things can go wrong there in a hurry, and they did for Gabriel Aubry. Shame for him, he got past his countryman Sebastian Bourdais at the start, who was running along in the sixth position. Interesting to me, though, how much the prototypes have got spread out in those early stages. I think a lot of caution be played there by many of the drivers, and you know, they're just letting the traffic sort itself out and not worry about losing a bit of ground. They know there's going to be a propensity for caution periods, particularly in the early stages, I think. So not worried about losing a bit of ground. I mean, you know, all the prototypes, none of them, I don't think, were within 2 seconds of each other prior to this caution period, which is unusual, is it not, in as competitive as DPI has become.
I'll be honest with you, Jeremy, I think you hit the nail on the head early on as well. I do think there's a little bit of fuel saving that's going on early on, and again, that sounds a ridiculous thing to say, because we know we would expect that we would get safety car interventions, but I do think people have got a plan early on, and the plan is to do as little as possible in terms of burning fuel whilst keeping their track position, and I think you nailed that right from the start. We've seen a couple of odd races this year where we've sort of been scratching our heads at the fuel strategies and perhaps not necessarily had all the information that the teams had, and I'm not criticising the teams there. Clearly they want to play their cards to their chest. I think particularly about mid-Ohio, where the fuel strategy seemed all over the place to us looking in from the outside. It simply didn't gel with what the teams have been telling us all of the week. Let's go to Shea Adam for a VP Racing Fuel pit, or indeed paddock update. On the 55, Harry Tinknell, nasty moment, losing the brakes down into turn 10. More details from Shea.
Just checked in with the team, and they said that they changed the front brakes only on the 55. They aren't sure if it was an issue that was made worse by that flat spotting moment, or if it was something that was going to develop anyway. But the team, with their fingers crossed, that this has made an improvement. Harry wasn't really able to get back up to full speed and give them a full report before the caution came out. So they will be eager to find out once we go back to green.
And that, I think, rather confirms our suspicions that they had a brake disc failure on that car on one side or the other, which would have been the cause of that puff of black smoke as Harry went for retardation on the brake pedal. So
just to recap what you said earlier, John, I mean, super quick thinking there from Harry Tinknell to jink the car left to make sure he didn't hit that other prototype. And thankfully for him, there was a bit of a gap between the car in front of him and the car directly in front of that one. He was able to nip through the middle. But that would have been a very, very scary moment.
Yeah, amazing how quickly racing drivers process information. Johnny Palmer, you or I, with any kind of issue, probably 99% of the world's population would have just frozen on the brake pedal there. Poor John Ferrano would have been picked up, and that car would have been hit very hard indeed. But Harry assesses the situation, sees where his escape road is, and takes it in literally the blink of an eye.
Yeah, I wonder how much warning he had about it at turn six, with maybe the brake starting to go there. But more dramas for Gabriel Aubry. He has at least got back to the pit lane, though, John.
Yeah, I think he got out of the way of everybody coming in behind him because the pits are now open. He couldn't turn that car with the front end being damaged, and so he took to the grass driver's left coming into the pit lane, so he wasn't holding anybody up in case he couldn't make the turn, the right-handed turn into the pit lane. Shea Adam, you have the DPIs, including the leaders.
fuel and tires for our pole sitter. And as he came in from the lead, Dane Cameron staying aboard the number six for Acura Team Penske. The team car also doing fuel and tires for Ricky Taylor. He, too, staying aboard. We also have the number 31 Whelen Engineering Cadillac. That should still be Felipe Nasr fuel and tires by the look of that stop. And the 77 Mazda, which is rolling back down the pit lane now, fuel and tires for Tristan Nunez as well. We've got LMP2 cars into the pit lane. Should be fuel and tires for all of them. Yes, as actually the Inter-Europol competition car gets rolling first before anybody else on the pit lane. Last of our DPIs off the pit lane, I believe, was the number 10 of Ryan Briscoe. So a bit of a slow stop for the Konica Minolta crew. I normally expect to see them moving up places during pit stops.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. 85 cars gone straight behind the wall. That was Gabriel Aubrey, the JDC Miller car. The only driver change that I noticed was Rob Hordis getting out and Kuba Szymanowski jumping in to that car in that number 51. So that was a very quick driver change and service for Inter Europol. But a lot of people won't know that team too well, JP, but very experienced team and have done good work in some of the European Championship races.
Yeah, they're a very experienced team, but not with an Orica 07, because they run a Ligier in the European Le Mans Series. That was badly crashed, sadly, last weekend at Monza by Matevos Izakian. And one of the big stories coming out from Saturday was that they had to then source another car from back in their headquarters in Germany. Polish team, as Jeremy's already established, but actually running out of the garage that is based in Germany. So that was quite a task to get the car to Monza overnight. But yes, incredibly experienced in the European Le Mans Series, not only now in LMP2, but to more so in LMP3. Very excited to see how they're going to get on in their first venture into the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship this weekend. GTs now launching their way into the pit lane.
And if you're having trouble identifying any of the cars, more great work by Andy Blackmore, www.spotterguides.com, and you'll be able to see all the liveries in one handy place. Shea Adam with this VP Racing Fuel pit update.
Mystery solved as to why Cooper McNeil stopped texting me. He has to get in his race car. It is a driver change at the 63 Scuderia course. Ferrari came in from the lead of the GTD category. Also in, we've got the Corvettes. Antonio Garcia staying aboard. Good luck getting him out of that bright yellow Cadillac. New tires and fuel for him. Tommy Milner also staying aboard the number 4 Corvette. That's the silver one. New tires and fuel for him as well. It was a splash of fuel only for the 48 Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini as they are the first car heading back down the pit lane. Tires and fuel for Shinya Machine in the 86 Acura next up, and then Zach Robichon in the number 9 Pfaff Racing Porsche. Welcome back, Zach. That was a busy pit lane as everyone came down, everyone took service, and I believe McNeil was the only driver change. No, Lars Kern is also into the number 9 for Pfaff now too. So we had two driver changes out of all of that pit madness.
And if you're not so sure about Lars Kern, he is the man who does all the record breaking on the Nordschleife for Porsche. 6 minutes 47.3 seconds, I think, earlier. Was that last year or was that this year? Can't remember now. But an extraordinary, that's the road car lap record. Lars Kern and Nick Tandy were out for that. Lars, a very accomplished racing driver as well, as you will imagine. You don't get to work your way around the Nürburgring and know it as well as he does. The Nordschleife, with some 70 odd corners on the Nordschleife alone, and he is the man who is the fastest Porsche road car driver around there. At IMSA Radio, if you want to get in touch, Scott Call made a good point earlier on. Thanks, Scott. He said, seemed quite the GTLM cars all seem to have lots of leaves and debris in the grill. That's a good point. And you might well then see some mechanics working on the front of the cars through that. Hello to Ian McCarthy and to Alan Prosser, who are tuned in. Kevin Payne and Mason Henry. Mason doing the double with the Bathurst 1000 coming later on today. That's going to be around 15-16 hours of racing I reckon, as well. Hello, Sarah Rigby, who noted that before the pit stops, the Heart of Racing Aston had moved up a few places, having started the back of the grid. Harry is in West Virginia, sipping on Earl Grey, listening to us here on RS2 IMSA Radio. Jan 007, noting that there are spectators at the track. How many? Not sure, but I know it's considerably reduced. Jan, thanks for that. At IMSA Radio, of course, if you want to get in touch with us. Shea has a couple of other driver changes.
Now that the timing sensors have picked everyone else up, mentioned Lars Kern. Also into the number 30 for Hardpoint Racing, it is Rob Ferriel, having taken over from Andrew Davis, who started that car. And we've also got Dylan McAvern into the number 96 Turner Motorsport BMW. No spoilers as to what happened in the race yesterday, but Turner did get tacos. So Robbie Foley, who took it very easy last night, he only had one margarita, good boy, is now out of the car, watching on the pit box alongside Bill Oberlin and Dylan McAvern behind the wheel for his first stint.
Thank you, Shea, for that VP Racing Fuel update for us. Jeremy?
Yeah, also in GTD, the number 48 car, of course, it had already made a pit stop right before the caution came out, so that did not come into the pits again. So Madison Snow will now lead GTLM for Paul Miller Racing. Shinya Michimi will be next on the racetrack ahead of Lars Kern, Cooper McNeil, as Jay was saying, that driver changed. So the number 63 Scuderia, of course, the Ferrari drop into fourth position. Number 8 car has just been in the pits. I'm not so sure that car did the correct wave around during that caution period. I might be wrong, but the car has just come into the pits now. He's actually showing us leading a lap overall.
Yes,
so I'm not quite convinced about that. The number 38 car... Maybe that was probably lapped right before, but I think the number 51 team did not take the opportunity to take the wave around. It should be back on the lead lap, I think, but isn't.
That's the end of Europol
in LMP2.
Yeah. Green flag. We go back to racing. 9 hours, 24 minutes still to go. Dan Cameron, Ricky Taylor, Felipe Nasr, Tristan Nunez, Sebastian Bourdais, Ryan Briscoe, your top six, and they're streamed across the start finish line quicker than I could see them. In fact, by the time I'd said that, they're already up to turn number two at the top of the hill. The laps click off very quickly indeed. 10 hours, as we've said. Really lovely conditions here. Hopefully, with fewer entries, the possibility for incidents should be somewhat reduced, other than people throwing it at the scenery themselves. So we could be looking at a record run here today. And the record run is... Who's got the hand up first? Come on.
The record distance here is 465 laps set last year.
There you go.
1,181 miles.
Well, I think that's equal points for those two. Excellent. 1,162, did you say, Shea?
81.
Okay. 1,181. Okay. That seems reasonable. Yeah, well, yes, I'm sure. And there will be somebody who will be at IMSA Radio. Please let us know how and where you are watching and whether you're going to stay bright and alert or some version of for Bathurst later on. What a few months of motor racing we've had, and still the season to come to an end with WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca and the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring to round off our season. Big battle in GT Le Mans. BMW number 25 of Conor De Filippi is in 6th. Nick Tandy right ahead of him, going down through the S's now in 5th position. And that, I've got a suspicion, Johnny Palmer, that battle is just going to run and run and run all the way through to the end of the race.
Yeah, it's a question also as to how the order flips around during the pit stops, because it was the two BMWs that actually led going into that pit stops phase under caution, with Laurens Vanthel doing the chasing. Well, Tonio Garcia for Corvette got a really good turnaround in the number 3 C8R, so he now leads. Vanthel has actually gained a position net from 3rd to now 2nd, and Milner, who was at the tail of the class on the opening phase, back up to 3rd position. Corvette clearly carrying good speed, but as are the BMWs, John Edwards and Conor DeFilippi will be looking to try and get back to the podium positions as quickly as possible. But as you say, DeFilippi at the moment, his way is compromised by Nick Tandy's car, which is showing good speed as well, the 911 numbered RSR 19. GT cars in clear air and green flag conditions generally going to make about an hour, I reckon, on a stint. So a good race run. Looking at the race winner last year, which was the 62 Risi Competizione Ferrari car, not here this year. It got the victory after 10 visits to pit lane, and that amounted to about 11 minutes in total. 11 minutes in a 10-hour race. That's all the time that that car spent on pit road.
Jeremy Shaw being watching the pit stop times as well. And I think this comes back to what you were talking about early on, Jeremy. Even at the start of a 10-hour race, a bit of fuel saving, bit of lift and course can make a difference.
It can, you know, if you put less fuel in the car, the pit stop's going to be faster and you can pick up time on the pit lane. And I fancy that might have been what happened there for number three car. They were able to vault to the front, as Johnny Palmer was saying. Here's the 25 BMW making a move, just cruising past the Porsche on the straight here once again. A good straight line speed for the BMWs, but late on the brakes there is Lawrence Vanthoor to try and maintain that position.
Yeah, that was coming down the back straight into 10A. Vanthoor holds on in the Porsche for second position.
No, it's Tandy and DeFilippi.
It's Tandy and DeFilippi. Yeah, no, it's all right. It is DeFilippi and Tandy. So that's fifth and sixth position. Kubis Mikowski set a new best time in LMP2 as he's in third position for Inter Europol, a 1:12.110. So a couple of seconds slower than the best time in DPI. It's P2 still able despite being slowed down quite a lot, so they can't compete with the DPIs. Remember, John Bennett and Colin Brown very nearly took the championship ahead of the manufacturer cars a couple of three seasons ago. That didn't go down well with the big manufacturers. IMSA made a change to slow the P2s down and give the, well, actually also speed the DPIs up a little bit as well, so that they effectively split them into two classes. And John Bennett coming back, of course, into the championship in a P3 car with Colin Brown next year, telling us on Midweek Motorsport on Wednesday that he would like to have the opportunity to run at the front of the field with the new for 2023 LMDH or DPI 2.0. And he said very much would like to do that. And I quote, with the manufacturer that we, with our favourite manufacturer, I think is what he said. Yes, that is what he said. Would be pressed
thing,
on
though,
that.
John? The only thing is that could be read into in two different ways, because Colin Brown and John Bennett have had a lot of success running in Orica's too.
Well, that's true. Well, that is very true. But of course, Orica are one of the chassis manufacturers for the DPI now, and will be in the new version of the rules in 20 when they come in 2023, if indeed they still do come in 2023. And whilst we hope that is still the case, we would understand why in the current financial climate that might have to be put back a wee bit. But plenty of to look forward to in 2021 with LMP3s coming into the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Not something I think I was expecting, but I've been pleasantly surprised at the take-up from some very good teams, including Core Autosport, Jeremy, who've said, yeah, we'll have a basin full of that. Thanks very much, we'll do the full season. And also attracting people to come over and do cherry pick the big races like United Autosport, who are going to come across with a couple of LMP2s to do the Rolex LMP3s, excuse me, to do the Rolex 24 in January. So once again, the temperature has been taken by IMSA. They've spoken to the paddock and they've given the paddock something they want.
Yeah, indeed so. And Andretti Autosport coming in to LMP3 as well, already announced. And yeah, I think probably a few more as well. I just hope that move to LMP3 doesn't kind of dilute things between the cars and or teams that are going to be racing in the WeatherTech series and the regular Prototype Challenge series. But I certainly think it's a good move moving forward.
It's Jeremy Shaw, who's with Johnny Palmer and me, John Hindhoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. 98.1 is Road Atlanta FM around the circuit, Sirius 217 and XM 202 in the USA and Canada, and around the world on RS2 IMSA Radio. Live, free and uninterrupted unblocked coverage of Motul Petit Le Mans for the year 2020. And if you're outside the US, you can be watching too on IMSA.TV and on the player at radio-show.co.uk. In the US, NBCSN for this first portion of the race, and they'll pick up again at the end of the race as well. Mazda battling for third position. Tristan Nunez has Felipe Nasr in his sight and gets a good run off the final corner as they carve their way through traffic into turn one. Slight braking from the Cadillac ahead of him, now climbing towards turn two over the brow, almost as one across that bright yellow curb on driver's right, and now plunging down the patchwork of road surface, of track surface there through turn five now, and past the number 86, second place now for Mayshank Racing and the Acura NSX GT and Shinya Mishimi behind Paul Miller Racing in the Lamborghini. Remember, they went off strategy early on, and those two prototypes have already caught Madison Snow through turn seven onto the back straight. Not too far away, Sebastian Bourdais in the Mustang Sampling Racing JDC car, the number five, in fifth position. I think he's only about another second further back, Jeremy, so well within striking distance there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're certainly staying a lot closer this time, although Dane Cameron now on this last lap has extended his lead all of a sudden to over 4 seconds over the second place car. The wheel engineering Cadillac and the Mazda, that we saw them working their way through the traffic on that last lap, they've also lost nearly 3 seconds now, but that's how quickly things can change here, particularly coming down through the S's. You know, the prototypes can easily lose a couple of seconds just then in that one section of the track to either the cars ahead of them or just the car ahead of them. But they've got to be patient in this game, because you've got to understand that while it might be frustrating to lose 2 or 3 seconds within a few hundred yards of racetrack, you're probably going to gain it back again sooner rather than later.
Now, Tommy Milner has the distraction of a recovering LMP2 car of John Ferrano, the number 8 Tower Motorsports machine, but those three in GTLM are circulating absolutely nose to tail. Tonio Garcia, Lawrence Vanthoor and Tommy Milner. We actually saw fastest laps from each of those cars on the same lap as well. Milner was quickest first of all, but almost in reply came some a kind of quick succession of GTLM quick times. They obviously found a little bit of gap on the racetrack in and around the traffic. It's actually Nick Tandy who's gone through in the last, I think, 4 or 5 laps to do a 117.239, which represents the best time from GTLM, as now the Acuras can skip by those GT cars to put another lap on them. We're working lap 34 now for race leader Dane Cameron, and he has a 3 second advantage there or thereabouts on his teammate Ricky Taylor. Ordinarily, we would have been seeing pit stops around about this time, because I reckon the DPIs can do 31, 32 laps under green flag running. But obviously, we had the early caution because of a Gabby Obrey crash with the 85 car nosing into the barrier. So everybody pitted on lap 21, in fact. And now this is going to be in the early 30s, 31, 32 lap stint, if we can stay green.
It's Johnny Palmer here in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Settle back. Let's see if we can get a bit of order here. Lappery now, the order of the day, is the faster prototypes carve their way through the various GTD and GT Le Mans battles. Fastest laps at the moment, 109.8 for Dane Cameron at the front of the field. Into Europol, and Kubis Mikowski has the best lap at a 112.1 for LMP2. 117.2 for Nick Tandy, fastest in GT Le Mans for Porsche. And it's a Ferrari, Cooper McNeil's car, 120.537 for the 63 WeatherTech sponsored machine. Those are your fastest laps at the moment. And only one of those, I know, is leading their class at the moment. 9 hours, 11 and a half minutes to go. Beautiful blue skies, 17 Celsius in the air, track temperature 52 Celsius. Not sure where that's been measured. Seems a little high to me. Although we have had a lot of UV light, there has not been a cloud in the sky since the sun came up this morning at Michelin Raceway Road, Atlanta. Already had one Michelin short race this morning with the... We've already had one race this morning with the Porsche Cup race, and the Michelin shod runners for this championship, all of the cars shod by Michelin in this championship, out for warm-up as well. So the track should be rubbering in after the running that we had on Thursday and Friday, and indeed on Wednesday actually, because there was a promoter test day on Wednesday. Turn one and through past the leader in GT Le Mans, Antonio Garcia. Looked to me that that was Ryan Briscoe carving his way through in the number 10 Cadillac, and going through, in fact, just down through the S's up to turn five. And before that, it was Sebastian Bourdais who carved through into turn one. Really been a very impressive debut season for the C8R. Now that is a pass for position for an Aston Martin, I think, there going through. Yes, that was Ian James going past Michael Di Casada. Now up to 8th position for Heart of Racing team in the Aston number 23. Very nice clean manoeuvre.
From the back of the grid, of course.
From dead last.
Yes.
Yeah.
Put there because of the change in qualifying tyres. Debris on the racetrack now.
Turn two, I think, Johnny. No, it's not. It's going to be turn 10A. And just one of the dive planes knocked off either the 14 car or the 57 as it was going by. So either Mischa Goikberg's lost some bodywork from the Acura or Di Casada. Which one do you reckon,
came
Johnny?
Off the Acura, I think. Okay. Yeah, and then over the kind of hood of the Lexus. And that's what helped the Aston through, actually. The delay there of those two clashing enabled the Aston Martin to gain two places in one move.
Jeremy Shaw has an LMP2 update for us.
I do. I'm hugely indebted to our race director, Bo Barfield, who was super enough to call me and explain to me what had happened with number 8 car. I question whether it had done the wave around right. This is a problem. I can't see the racetrack. Because before the caution came out, it was a lap down in 16th position. They took the wave around absolutely correctly by that. For those of you not familiar, he was in between the safety car and the class leader in LMP2. So he was able to get back onto the same lap as the B2 leader, which is number 52 car at that stage. He then did not come into the pits like you would normally expect. That's why he was shown actually as the overall race leader for one lap during that caution period. He then pitted, made his pit stop at the end of the caution period. So he's now back on the lead lap and running very strongly there in the second position in the class. That's John Ferrano. But of course, he has not yet made his first... he has made the pit stop, but he's back on strategy now with the other guys. The number 51 car, as I surmised, was eligible for the pass around. He was also in between the safety car and the class leader, but he did not take it. Number 51 car was driven at the start of the race by Rob Hodes. He's obviously not familiar with the way things work here, and he didn't take the pass around, so he remains one lap down to the leader in LMP2.
As ever the gentleman, Bob Barfield, thank you very much indeed for getting in touch, and kind regards to all in race control, doing the job that none of us would really want to do. And doing it with a smile on their faces as well. Thanks, Port. Thanks to the race control team. Missing seeing you guys. Very much in different bubbles, aren't we, at the moment. Coming down to an hour's worth of racing being completed. About 7 minutes to go before we hit that mark. And as ever, in endurance racing, there'll be all little markers throughout the race that the teams use. So if you look at it as a 10-hour race, it can look rather daunting. Coming down from 5 to 6, good battle going on at the moment, and almost an opportunity for Nunes to get past Felipe Nasr. 31 red and white wheel and Cadillac against the dark red Mazda Motorsports Multimatic DPI. The white and red, white and blue Multimatic DPI. That car just held up, the Cadillac just held up in traffic going through turn five, but there's not really an alternative line through there. Bit follow my leader. And Nunes, who has been very racy in this opening stint, unable to capitalise there or get the run out of five down to six. That would have been the other opportunity. Remember, the Mazda has the smallest displacement engine in the DPI. It's just 2 litres, four cylinders in line, turbocharged, of course. But it's very light and nimble and tends to be very good through the twisty bits. In between that, you've got the Cadillac with its big V8 and at the big capacity end of things, and in between the Acura, which has been very impressive and has the momentum at the moment, Jeremy, not just in this race, but they're coming off a three race winning streak, the Acura Team Penske guys.
Yeah, they certainly are, and it's all been a number seven car. They started off the season with three last or second to last place finishes, but boy, have they come back with a vengeance by winning three races in a row, and now very much in championship contention. And it's super tight in the overall points table. Juan Briscoe and Renger van der Zende lead in the IMSA World Tech Sports Car Championship by just 3 points over Pipo Durrani. The Elio Castroneves Ricky Taylor car just 2 points behind them also. And then two or three points between the rest of the cars as well. So it really is super tight with this race plus two more remaining this year.
So, Johnny, 56 minutes gone. Your impressions then of your first IMSA WeatherTech sports car, IMSA Mutulpetilamon?
Yeah, busy at the start, although actually everyone was looking out for one another, and I think Jeremy's quite right. Nobody's going gung-ho in the early stages, actually trying to gain a little bit of time on pit road where possible. I'd be really interested to see at the end of our first green flag stint quite how far the race leaders can push. I mean, Felipe Nasr's really charging hard and is now with Ricky Taylor, but there's clearly going to be a very different strategy for the opening three quarters of the race compared to at the end. And that's, of course, where we get into the darkness and this record-breaking amount of darkness hours that we will have. A later race than last year by 35 minutes in the day, and, of course, later in the year as well. So well over 3 hours of darkness running till 10:40 local time tonight.
Yeah, we're just coming up to the same amount of green flag racing that we had from the start of the race to Gabriel Aubry's incident, which brought out the safety car. Just over 20 minutes we had there. Just that one safety car, full course yellow for 13, nearly 14 minutes on the clock. But that was, well, we presume that was just a mistake by Gabriel Aubry. We didn't see any incident that precipitated that. Close battle between the 911 Porsche, number 911 Porsche, the 24 BMW. That's Nick Tandy and John Edwards. Nick's been battling to keep Conor De Filippi behind him and was having a little go coming out of turn seven at John Edwards in the black BMW. And I think there was just a little rub between the left front fender wheel arch and the right rear of the BMW.
It was marginal, wasn't it? They were tripping over each other coming out of turn seven. That's what I mean about it being not a lot of real estate left to right, particularly at those natural pitch points at turn six and seven. And if you are encountering traffic there, particularly in the higher, in the faster classes, I should say, either of the prototype divisions, just got to bide your time. You've got to wait. And that's exactly the same in the early part of the lap as well. Because although you're so desperate to overtake, you have to convince yourself that the guy behind is also trying to do the same, but it's really only single file permitted through the sweepers at 2, 3, 4 and 5, and then a little bit later on into 6 and 7 too.
Well into this stint of fuel and tyres, Jeremy Shaun, a new fastest lap of the race.
Yeah, a rare clear lap there for Dane Cameron. 1 minute 9.77770 resets the fastest lap. You might remember I talked earlier on, it was Pipo Durrani who had the fastest lap at a 9.9. Cameron bettered that just after the restart, did a 9.85. Now a little bit quicker, 9.77. Still some way away from the lap record that was set last year by Felipe Nasr. 1 minute 8.8. To put into perspective, perhaps a little more so, the fastest lap when the cars were here last month for the six-hour race, Petit Le Mans, if you like, it was Olivier Pla in a Mazda that set the fastest lap at a 1:09.6. So almost down to those times now by Dane Cameron, our race leader.
We're live around the world on RS2 IMSA Radio 98.1 FM at Road Atlanta. And Dave Miller, if you're listening, check your paddock per year, please. Apparently there's a bit of static on that at the moment, I'm being told, by one or two of the teams. Thank you very much to Dave Miller, who, as ever, is working hard to make sure that we are being heard around Road Atlanta at the moment. Sirius 217 XM 202, if you're going back to your cars. Oh, Dave Miller's fixed it already. We only have to mention his name and it's sorted. He is that good. He is that good. Let's have a look at how they stand as we're coming down to the hour being completed. It's Acura Team Penske 1 and 2, 11 seconds between the number 6 and the number 7, with Cameron and Taylor, Dean Cameron and Ricky Taylor behind the wheel. Just 6 tenths further back in third position is Felipe Nasr for Whelan Engineering. That's the 31 Cadillac, the red and white car. Tristan Nunes is just another 1.3 seconds further back in fourth for the 77 red, white and blue, but mostly white, Mazda Motorsports DPI. Top five made up by Sebastian Bourdais for Mustang Sampling, and he's another 5 seconds further back. And let's go down to the top six, because they're all DPIs. 1.6 seconds further back, the championship leading number 10 gloss black Conyngham Minolta Cadillac with Ryan Briscoe on board. P2, Patrick Kelly has pulled out well over a minute, nearly a minute and 10 seconds on the field. He's been going great guns in the PR1 Mathieson Motorsport number 52. John Ferrano getting up into second position in the number 8 Tower Motorsport by Starworks car. Third position for Inter-Europol competition, and the fastest lap as well for Kubus Mikowski. And Jim McGuire, Performance Tech Motorsport, is in fourth place in the number 38. In GT Le Mans, it's Tonio Garcia by a second over Lawrence Vanthoor. That's Corvette number 3 from Porsche at number 912. And in third, just another 7 tenths further back, Tommy Milner. So the top three inside a couple of seconds and going very nicely, thank you very much indeed. Then a whole 1.2 seconds back to the second, to the BMW rather, of John Edwards. That's the number 24. So 3.912.424. Then the Porsche of Nick Tandy, just a half a second further back. That's the 9.11. And Conor De Filippi, 6 tenths further back from that. Madison Snow leads for Paul Miller Racing. Remember, they went off strategy. And they're looking for the Michelin Endurance Cup points. So we'll have to see how that plays out for them. That they'd done a pit stop at a different time from everybody else and then came in on the last full course yellow and topped off. But Madison at the front of the field at the moment in the number 48, as he has just on 1.4 seconds between himself and the Mershank Racing Shinji Mishimi driven number 86, which started on Paul. Lars Kern is in the Porsche number 9. That's the plaid fronted Porsche of Pfaff Motorsports. He's got 3 tenths on Cooper McNeil in the Ferrari number 63 in fourth. Fifth, Frankie Montecalvo for Ian Vassar Sullivan in the Lexus. And sixth, the BMW of Turner Motorsport. So that's Lamborghini, Acura, Porsche, Ferrari, Lexus, BMW in the top six, all different manufacturers. And that is how they stand with just over an hour completed, 8 hours 57 minutes to go here at Michelin Road Atlanta for the 2020 Mutul Petit Le Mans.